We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 316 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, that's LaVon. And before you ask, LaVon, no, I didn't bring you on just because we're leaving the show with Luke DeYoung. But before we get to that, I want to ask, how was your holiday and your new year?
My new year was fine. Thank you very much. How was yours?
It was good enough. Just content plans and preparing things for the new year. So I always say that there is exciting stuff down the pike. But yeah, it seems like whenever I have time off, it's like how you have your best ideas in the shower. When I actually don't get to record stuff and watch matches, I take the time, I stare at a wall, and I figure out what's coming next. So that's basically right. What I did for a few days. And now it's back to the old grind. But where we start,
Hold on. You're starting off 2022 like extremely horribly by talking to me and mentioning my name together with Luke DeYoung, man. I mean, Dan, that's not how we roll.
No, it's a bit of a continuation of 2021. I think my favorite quote actually was an NBA player, LaMelo Ball. He did a post-game interview and he said, "New year, new me, same me though." And I feel like that's what most of us are going to do. And I feel like that's even what FC Barcelona is going to do in a sense. But it seems like you take a snapshot here. It's January 3rd and Barcelona is fifth in the table, right behind Atletico Madrid, hot on the heels. The goal was top four. It wasn't going to happen. And now, even with a squad that was ravaged by COVID, and I felt like yesterday's game, as we start to review this 1-0 win over Mallorca, yes, Mallorca had a lot of COVID, COVID absences as well as Barca did, who had 10 players missing to COVID plus the injured. But it seems like the COVID thing isn't going to go away and it is going to hang a cloud over the rest of the season, or at least the next few weeks as this Omicron and the variant does peak and then that will go down again. I mean, players are getting tested. That's why they're testing positive for this very, very transmissible Omicron. And then so as of today, Pedri and Ferran Torres tested positive after training with the squad, which is a bit of an uh-oh with another match 2 days away against Linares in the Copa del Rey. But yeah, I mean, I think for Barca with the squad that they have, I mean, all the young players, I don't know. I feel like I don't have much to say after this Mallorca match. I think we can talk about the individual players that we haven't seen a lot of, but overall as a team, they took care of business. They got the 1-0 win on the road and they got the 3 points and that's what mattered. And they took care of business.
Yeah. I thought they had a very strong first half. They created, they robbed the ball very highly. Again, Frank de Jong was amazing in the first half. I really loved his performance. Luke de Jong was good at pretty much the only thing that he is good at, which is putting himself in positions to score goals, which finally paid off because he got the winning goal.
Yeah, I mean, Luke de Jong, the way I say this, there's not a lot of talking points from it. I mean, I think two players that I want to speak to in particular, Luke de Jong and Ricky Puig. Luke de Jong for first. Yeah, I mean, Mallorca said, hey, if you can beat us with Oscar Mingueza, who doesn't play very often, if you can beat us with crosses out from the right side from him, or across from Ronald Araujo, who isn't known for his superb crossing either, and Luke de Jong is going to beat us in the air, then that's how we're going to lose this match. And that's how Mallorca lost the match, because Barcelona wound up executing on what Mallorca gave them to do. But you're right. As far as keeping that line of confrontation high and Frankie de Jong as the pivot being central to that, really important. You saw his heat map. it wasn't necessarily in the middle of the field, is that he would win the ball back on either side right before midfield. So he was preventing so many of those counters. It didn't really feel like Morocco was countering because they were snuffed out so many times. And on the point of Ricky Puig, I think it says a lot about the midfield of Nico Puig and Frankie de Jong that you don't really have to be worried about that rotation. I don't think there's any, you know, you and I are pretty sensible about Puig too. There's no hot take here. It's that, you come out of the game saying how much can Xavi use him? I mean, he is fine. I mean, he came in for Gabi or Pedri or whoever it may be, and Busquets as well. And he completed 66 of 69 passes, was only dispossessed once, only lost possession four times, which is really good compared to the 13 from De Jong and 12 from Nico. He had 9 ball recoveries, which was most on the entire team. I thought he was pretty reserved in the press. I think he's still limited in some of the things that he can do, but largely he took care of the ball. And he seems like under Xavi has given him specific instruction to, I mean, you were the one who had said it, that he does look sometimes like a chicken with his head cut off. And I felt like he was much more reserved yesterday. And that was really helpful to keeping the shape of the team. And he did look like a quality reserve for FC Barcelona. And that's what his role is. That's what he's supposed to be. And I don't think we can get, there's nothing more to argue about Puig. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I would also say that, and I think that one of the things that you brought up is very important here. He recovered more balls than any other player. And I think that the way that Xavi wants us to play defense favors him, because with his physique, you don't want him to have to defend players that come at him. You want to take advantage of who he is as a player and how he is built. So he is small and fast, which means that he can press very well. And that's how you want to play with Ricky Puig. High press.
Yeah, I think he's still the fifth midfielder on the depth chart. But yeah. I mean, regardless of what happened in yesterday's game, that's a fair place to have him.
Wait, fifth?
Sixth. He's sixth, of course. Yeah.
Let's count him. Nico, Gavi, Pedri, Frenkie de Jong,
Busquets.
Sixth. Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, sixth. Oh, yeah. I misspoke there because Pedri's been out for a million years. So even though Pedri's still 19 years old, it feels like he's been out for a million years. But yeah, so I was happy with the midfield. I thought they were the reason why Mallorca were, not say overwhelmed, but Mallorca were forcing, because they were playing so narrow in that it gives a medium block with a 4-4-1-1. And by playing so narrow, they were forcing Puig and Nico and Frankie to take chances through the middle. That's why the number for Frankie, he was dispossessed, or he lost possession 13 times. Nico lost it 12. Yet those loss of possession didn't really kill Barcelona, because they were usually in Mallorca's half. And Barca were already set up, you know, we talk about rest defense, Barca were already set up to get the ball right back, which is what they did. They recovered the ball plenty when they lost the ball in those positions. So while there wasn't a lot of space for that midfield to work through, I still thought Nico, Puig, and Frankie, and I think Puig also has some rust to him, where his balls, as I said, he only misplayed 3 passes, but I thought his diagonal balls and knowing what to do was much better than his instinct, you know, combining in chemistry in the middle between Nico and Frankie with those 10 to 12 yard passes, just because that takes time and chemistry and just game fitness that Puig doesn't have. So he was much better when he was able to almost premeditate his diagonal passing and using the skills that haven't gone away, that haven't gotten rusty, that he has. And I mean, it's his diagonal ball to Mingueza, I believe, that he gets the pre-assist for the Luke de Jong goal. And it's something too for Mingueza, credit to him, who got better as the game went on. I mean, his first two crosses made me go, uh-oh, if this is the game plan today, Luke de Jong finishing on a Mingueza cross like that, it's going to be a long 0-0 for Barcelona. But I thought he settled down, his crossing got better. And then defensively, again, this is not a compliment to Mallorca, but Mingueza was so high up that right wing, basically as a right winger, that even when he was forced to defend, he wasn't really having to defend and scurry back, because he was supported pretty well by, I mean, this is my next question coming up for about the man of the match, but let's just do Mingueza first though.
No, he was more of a false right back.
Yeah,
because Piqué, Eric Garcia, who I think both Piqué and Eric Garcia had excellent matches, by the way.
By the way, I want to put a pin in that and come back to that.
And Araujo, they were tasked with defending, whereas Mingueza was given license to just move up. And you know, if you're gonna play Luke de Jong, by all means, cross the ball. Because, you know, like, that's pretty much the only thing that he's good at. When I say that it's the only thing he's good at, that is very disparaging. I think yesterday was an amazing example of how incredibly good you need to be a terrible player at Barcelona. Because that bicycle kick, like, there's not, like, none of us can pull that off.
No.
You know, I still remember when we signed him, they made that that image, the presentation image, which was like his face superimposed on him making a bicycle kick. And it's like, it was so hilarious because, you know, we did not sign Rivaldo, we signed Luke de Jong. And, you know, he almost scores the goal of the year doing exactly that. It's just insane.
Yeah, I mean, again, you look at his career. I mean, that's the guy that has scored goals before. I mean, he played at Sevilla. I mean, and he was good at Sevilla for two seasons. And he's almost set records at PSV. And yeah, I mean, he's a fine player who's had good days and bad days. But for Barcelona, fans and culés expect pretty much a good day every time out. And they want a match winner. And so, again, it's one of those two where with Barca being, I mean, who knows about this COVID situation, but in theory, let's be positive here. And in theory, this is the most players that Barca will miss all season long, which totaled, I think, 14 first team players, I think, in total for that game. So if Barcelona always have more than 14 first team players missing, and they are always a little bit healthier than they were against Mallorca, Xavi and Culés can look back at January 2nd and say, hey, Luke de Jong and Oscar Mingueza and, you know, and a lot of young players wound up getting 3 points. And those points, as I say, are just as important as El Clasico. Those points are still what move you up the table and matter at the end of a season. And one of the big reasons for that, too, I think, as much as Luke de Jong and Oscar Mingueza is how we'll remember it, we're going to do PK and Garcia, the back line, and Ter Stegen. Then we'll go back up to the youngsters up front. So okay. PK, I mean, PK was my man of the match. As much as Luke de Jong scored the goal, PK, 99 touches, 5 clearances, 4 block shots, 2 interceptions, 4 of 4 on his ground duels, 7 of 9 on his aerial duels, and 10 of 14 on long balls. That has an incredible performance. And for those even wondering, is he going to retire even next year? I think this kind of match yesterday goes, I mean, I don't know. I mean, PK is still the best center back that Barcelona has next to Araujo as a defender. But I mean, yes, Araujo is a better one-on-one defender. But I mean, PK is what is making this defense click under Xavi. The defense is conceding less since Xavi took over, and PK has been better. And that's a big reason why. I mean, yeah, he was so good yesterday.
Yeah, and he was good against Sevilla as well.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, no, he was dominant. And I think this just shows that he's not going anywhere. He already lowered his salary, you know, so that's one thing that is out of the way. And then next season, whatever happens, Eric Garcia and Piqué are going to be at the club. Hopefully Araujo renewals, because those are people that you do not want to get rid of right now. Plus, like, I don't really see the advantage of getting rid of Piqué if he is on low wages, because he is still a leader and he does not have to start every day. But let him play like this and let the young guys deserve to start over him. This can only be to the benefit of everybody.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, I mean, you get the sense. I mean, it was interesting for Eric Garcia, who missed 2 or 3 matches, I think, under Xavi already in the middle, and he was healthy. And I wonder if this is a case of Xavi saying, hey, Eric, I mean, you have the ability to play balls. I mean, again, you're our best ball playing center back. However, there's a lot of big however with Eric Garcia. But if you can earn your minutes, you're going to get your minutes. And was he the partner for PK against Sevilla? I believe. I think that was a match he came back for. And yeah, so, I mean, Eric was also good in that match. And he was really good yesterday, too. And he just tidy. And again, it's very helpful, just like with Spain, it's very helpful when Eric Garcia has a high line of confrontation in front of him. It's also helpful when Frankie de Jong is playing and closing down and recovering that space right before midfield, closer to the sideline. Because Eric Garcia, if he's only having to defend on the front foot, just like Busquets, up through the middle, he's fine. But when you make him defend horizontally, then you have issues. And again, I think that Nico and Puig and De Jong did a good job of protecting. And that's what we mean by protecting with a pivot or a double pivot. They protected Eric Garcia from being put on an island to one v1 having to track somebody back. It's also helpful for Eric to have Ronald Araujo playing right back next to him. Well, actually, well, he played left back yesterday against Mallorca, but having Araujo on that back line on one of those wings means if the ball comes through the middle, and this happened in the second half. I think it was either Ilias or it might have been Eric who committed the foul on a breakaway, but it was fine because no one got a yellow from it, because while it was in on a counter or whatever, there were so many purple shirts around the Mallorca player that the refs couldn't feel like it was just this last ditch, what is it, a hurricane tackle to manage to cut out a counterattack. It was none of one of the other purple shirts would have got to it, and somebody just put a foot in. And so I felt like Eric Garcia was not put on an island at all, because he always had Araujo to, especially if America were trying to cut down the middle, that he always had Araujo to come over, or Mingueza was also coming over if that. And then PK was cleaning everything up. I mean, I already read you PK's numbers. He didn't get anything wrong. And then behind it, what about Ter Stegen? What about that save? What's that going to do for him, you think? Does that matter? Does that matter for his confidence?
It matters for the 3 points he took home. As for what it is going to do for him, let's see. Let's see. So I don't think I've never been on the Ter Stegen bandwagon, as in people named him a top three goalkeeper during his first seasons at the club. I never thought he was necessarily top three. Then when his performance started dropping a little bit, I did not all of a sudden start treating him as a bottom three goalkeeper either. I think he's a good goalkeeper. He's had like a couple of rough years. You expect good goalkeepers to make good saves every now and then. If he can turn this into something consistent, great. Then again, my opinion on Ter Stegen is not going to change because of one save.
Of course not.
So let's see what happens.
I mean, you said first few seasons at the club. I mean, I actually think his best season, what was that, 2018, or that first season when Ernesto Valverde, it took to Levante to lose a single match all year when they almost won in the Liga. I mean, he and Messi alone were winning. Were winning points for Barcelona. Just Ter Stegen and Messi, where game after game after game after game, he would get the one or two saves that you needed to get 3 points or to get the 1 point or whatever it was. And so, yeah, I mean, I that's when I said he was top three, because I think he was. I think that season under Ernesto Valverde, when he and Messi were winning so many points. But you're absolutely right. The last two seasons now. And the other thing with Ter Stegen is I continue to say, I don't think he's right. He has been between the knee and the shoulder for the last two seasons. I don't think he's ever been right. And if he can get right again, it's not one save, but if he can make that save and the shoulder didn't need massive icing, or he's not going to be hurt for 2 weeks after this, that's a good sign to me. And that is progress. That is growth back to what I think could be his best.
Yeah, I don't know. It's only recently that rumors have started that his problem has been the knees all along, but I just don't know if that is true. To me, that's just speculation.
Well, that's what I mean. That's why I put more
because he's playing, right? I mean, if he's playing with physical problems and playing poorly, then don't you think that, you know, the second goalkeeper would have been given the chance for a stretch?
Yeah, I mean, Neto's good enough to play. I mean, especially if Ter Stegen's not 100%. I don't know why the club, as much as they're allowing Fati and Pedri and stuff to come back to 100%, I don't know why Ter Stegen would have been allowed. I mean, the other worry, the bigger worrying thing would be if a doctor had said, hey, it's just going to be like this. Your shoulder, I'm saying, like, let's say he has an icy shoulder and he had the surgery and he says, hey, this is what it's going to feel like probably for your career. And that's it. That's a bigger worry. And I wonder if that's information that, you know, we're not privy to. But
imagine that is the case. Or imagine that the physicians say, this might get better in 6 or 12 months. but it's not going to get worse by playing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but then you have a goalkeeper with physical issues who plays poorly because he's been playing poorly for quite some time now. Don't you think that somebody would have gotten a chance at second? Don't you think that one of the second goalkeepers would have gotten a chance?
Yeah,
if you know that your number one guy is playing poorly and has physical issues.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't this the case a while back ago? Was it Hesp or was it Carlos Busquets? Or wasn't this very exact situation, I thought, was an issue years and years ago? But all right, somebody can let us know. So tweet at us, let us know if that's been the case before. But all right, let's finish this up, because I think for Mallorca, we did see some young players. I didn't think, but we've seen Ilaš Akolmaš for more than just the 45 minutes in Xavi's debut match. Ferenc Hukla, again, who feels like he's becoming a regular. And then Alfaro Sanz made his debut, as well as Estanas Pedrola, who was, you know, I looked at his heat map and he was basically defending for his 10 minutes, which is not what you want from an 18-year-old who doesn't really know where to be or to defend. So you could hear Xavi audibly yelling at him, and he almost, I mean, that's why Ter Stegen had to make that save. Pedrola is 18 and he made an 18-year-old mistake. But I want to compare Ferran and Ilaš, and I think it's a little bit unfair for me to do this, but I was trying to think about this. I said this in a match review yesterday. I think of when I'm trying to evaluate young players, and this is biased, I think I do this by accident, and this is me watching a lot of La Masia too, I almost put young players in two camps. I either say, oh, that's a player that could be special in a few years or has that special little something that you go, oh, okay, maybe if there's a lot that's figured out and he continues on a linear path of growth, he could be a first teamer for Barcelona, or he could be a starter. And then there's players that are just in a flashpoint in time that are useful. An example I used yesterday was De La Feu. Clearly, from the moment we saw De La Feu, was special. When he was 16, 17, 18 years old, that kid was special. But Luis Enrique, as you know, could not use him at all because he was not useful to what Luis Enrique needed him to do. And he couldn't even do a job. And so he kept getting sent out. And he also had like a bunch of other, it's isn't individually about De La Feu, but he was special, but he wasn't useful. And in another case, I think of Isaac Cuenca back in the days of Pep Guardiola. That was a player who you saw, he was never going to overtake Pedro or David Villa or whoever it was. There was no path forward for him to overtake one of the stars, but he was a useful player as a member of that squad for Pep Guardiola. And he's in all the pictures, you're in all the trouble winning pictures. There's Isaac Cuenca's face. And years from now, people are going to be able to ask, who is that? And I'm going to say, oh, he was just a useful winger, young winger from Barca B that Pep Guardiola was able to use in a few matches and he got the job done. And so for me, looking yesterday at Ilaš and Ferran, it was the epitome, I think, of Ferran Jukla at this moment, who's about to turn 23, is a useful player right now for Xavi. And will this season make more appearances than Ilaš Akolmaš? But Ilaš, clearly, when the ball is at his feet, three key passes in the game. I mean, he only lost the ball even 9 times, which, as I had said a few weeks ago with Dembele against Sevilla, who lost 25 times. If your right winger is only losing the ball between 9 and 15 times, you're actually in a good spot. That said, Ilaš also faded. His defensive positioning was suspect when on Mallorca crosses in the second half. And again, he faded as the game went on. But clearly, he's very special. He's 17, very, very special player. And I think it's the very difference between special and useful. That the special player that Xavi's using, again, he could have had a brace in the game maybe, but Ferran Jukla is going to just be a squad rotation piece and useful for Xavi this season. And do you feel like Alvaro Sanz, he comes on, I felt like he was useful. Not special. He's not a special player, clearly. He's 20. And Xavi just needed him to defend he's a defensive midfielder. Xavi had him defending as a high interior, saying, hey, go out there, defend, do what you know how to do, but do it high up the field and just help us get these 3 points. And then Pedrola is a little interesting because I don't know where he is yet. I haven't seen enough of him, to be honest with you. He's got a few special things we've seen. That's why he's a member of Barca B and one of their promising players, if you will. But he definitely wasn't useful yesterday because he almost made these mistakes that cost 3 points. But I don't know. Do you think what do you think of my little hypothesis? How do you enjoy my lecture?
It makes sense. I think to start with, De La Feu was special, but maybe De La Feu was too special because he behaved like he was special, and that did not help him make that step to the next level that he needed to make. It did not help him when Pep Guardiola was the manager, and it helped him even less when Luis Enrique was the manager. And by the time when he came back under Ernesto Valverde, his development had completely stalled. Because of the four years that he just did not develop. I don't remember Isaac Cuenca that much in the first couple of seasons, though. Like, I remember him in the 2011-2012 season, but I don't remember him the season before. I thought Cuenca was special.
Really?
Because of his dribbling skills. But then, I love like pure wingers. and Cuenca is a very pure winger. But then he had those knee issues.
Right, that derailed his career, absolutely.
And that killed him. I think Ferran Jukla is useful. Yeah, I agree. Ferran Jukla is useful. I think it is special that he plays in the first team.
After being cast off by Espanyol, after not being able to make Espanyol in the second division's first team, and now he's playing. And if there is one other player available for the wing, I'd probably been Elias, but then a second winger would have moved Jukla back into the middle, and Luke de Jong would have not started that game because Jukla would have started it with Luke de Jong. So, yeah. Okay. So I do want to ask about,
I have a question because Elias Akomach?
Akomach, yeah.
Or probably
I'm corrected on Elias every single time I say it. So Elias, I think I need him to do more interviews and we need to get to the bottom of that one, but I know someone's going to correct me anyway, but it happens. But yes, Akomach, yeah.
So yeah, I liked him. I thought he played better than on his debut, and at least during the first half. I don't know. I don't know if he's going to make it, but I enjoyed seeing him play. The other two young players, there's nothing good or bad I can say about them, because to come in under those conditions, you know, for such young players, wow. What I think is amazing though is that we have Ferran and Abde playing in our first team. Like, they were both signings for the B team,
mm-hmm.
and they're playing in the first team. Especially Ferran, like you said it, like he could not make it in the first team of Espanyol, and now he's being a useful contributor to our team. I would even think that, you know, it's better to have him at the nine position than Memphis Depay, just because of the profile. And I like how hard he works. I like that he's not afraid.
No.
He's not afraid of taking players on. He's not afraid of shooting. He works for the team. I like a lot what he gives the team right now. And the same for Abde. Now, would you say that Abde is useful or special?
You know, that's actually what I was going to go next with. His dribbling is special. His ability to dribble is so special that I wonder if he is special. And it's also that, I don't know, I think it's totally fair for not to say that he's a late bloomer. It's crazy to say that a 19-year-old kid is a late bloomer, but the fact that he wasn't snatched up earlier by one of the quote-unquote top teams in Spain makes you go, well, how did he stay at Hercules? But also, Hercules might have been able to keep him as a pretty well-kept secret. He only made, 17 appearances or something for them last year as an 18-year-old. So, I mean, he could have been a guy that grew at 16 or 17, which everybody does. But yeah, his ability to dribble is what's special. But unlike Elias, you could clearly see at any age, he's 17, the greatest ability he has, that ability to cut into the middle and get onto his left foot. His left foot is not going to get any worse, right? And it's not that Easy Abde's dribbling is going to get worse, but as bigger and stronger and first team, when the scouting report on him is out, when teams start to lock in and say, hey, he's kind of a one-trick pony in terms of his dribbling, we have to force him to beat us other way, even though I must said his goal was scored not on dribbling, it was by putting himself at the back post. So if his goal scoring instincts are better and do continue to evolve and improve, I think he actually can be special. But again, what are we asking for special? I mean, can you have every player in Barca's team be special? Ansu is special. And are we comparing Ansu and Easy Abde? No, they're two peas in a pod. But Dembélé is a special player, and is Easy Abde, can he be a dribbly special kind of, you know, Dembélé, right? I mean, it's just, now we're talking about levels of special. And I think special just means that, I think special to me means this one player for a few moments can win you a match. And Luke de Jong is going to score the goal. Yeah, he won Barca the match. But again, Luke de Jong is not going to, even the bicycle kick, right? The bicycle kick is the bicycle kick that number nines do. But it's not like he's going to pick the ball up in midfield and then you're going to blink and you go, whoa, the ball's in the back of the net. That guy did that. That's, I think, what I mean by special. And Easy Abde could be special, I think, in that instance. I think there's going to be moments when you're going to go, oh, the ball's in the back of the net, and Easy Abde did it by picking up in midfield. And I think Elias could do the same thing. He's 17. I just want to confirm that again. Elias is 17. And that's a totally fair spot for a 17-year-old to be. Don't get that Gabi and Pedri and Fati, they broke our brains. Like, Elias is 17.
Yeah, no, this is true. So, because Elias is 17, like, let's wait and see what happens. Because, you know, how is he going to develop? He has a very good ability to cut inside and make space for the shot. His left foot is not going to get any worse. How much better is it going to get, though?
His left foot, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I reverse that. I say, how much better is his right foot going to get? Because we saw that those overlaps with Mingueza, that clearly at halftime, Xavi told him, you need to overlap a little bit more. and he did, and he was not really comfortable getting it to his right foot. You could tell that he wanted to, but it just wasn't there yet. And guys can improve their weak foot. That's not something that, especially at 17, it's not something that doesn't happen.
Right-footed players are often decent at developing their weak foot.
And left-footed players are not, because they can always go to the left foot. Agreed. That is true. That is true.
Yeah, left-footed people. Yeah, I didn't know that they can always go to their left foot. But for some reason, I think left-footed players are sometimes just wired differently. And they tend not to develop their weak foot as much. As for Abde.
Well, I mean, wait. I think that is just because I think the natural disposition of a defender is to prepare for a right-footed player. The majority of players are right-footed. So I think that it's like, it's almost instinct for a defender to be prepared for the move to come from a right foot. And so, I mean, Messi is a different thing where guys like try to change their main frame and try to reprogram themselves to prepare for his left foot, and they couldn't stop it. But I mean, yeah, I mean, whether it's him or Oyen Robin, I mean, guys with that really, really, really good left foot don't really ever need to change it, right? Because they can always get around with that left foot.
Maybe. I'm going to need to think about that. You might be right. Back to Abde. So even if, you know, his main trick is dribbling, the amount of successful dribbles that he completes per match are just that's just an insanely high amount.
Yeah, 6.9 per night. Yeah,
I mean, he's up there with the best in Europe. So that is something that is difficult to stop or difficult to deal with if the team manages to isolate him, and if you have a good forwards and good midfielders, then you can put Abde in positions where his dribbling can cause problems.
Yep. I mean, yeah.
The other thing, why people overlooked him or why clubs overlooked him, maybe because he's hunchbacked?
I just think he was a well-kept secret at Hercules. I mean, that's all it is. I don't know how many, as much as we can say, oh, Barcelona has eyes everywhere. I mean, there's only so many scouts that work for these clubs, and maybe they didn't get down to the Valencian community to watch a Hercules, you know, under 17. I mean, so many times, like doing the La Masia stuff with Nico Gonzalez or even with Gabi or with all these young players that join the academy when they're 10, 11 years old. So often that's because a Barca scout was at a Barca youth tournament at under 12 or under or whatever it was. And they happened to see this other player on the other team that was really, really talented. And there is a clear cut. I mean, easy to understand that Hercules, who has had financial trouble, maybe didn't have the money to send their youth squads to those kind of tournaments, and therefore no scout ever saw him in the Hercules U16 seed or whatever. And I think he actually played for even smaller clubs prior to that. I don't think he was at Hercules even the whole time. I think he was somewhere else prior to. So if no scout ever was able to see him elsewhere, he also moved to Spain at the age of 7 too, from Mallorca. So it's okay. Not like he was grabbed at some U6, you know, or, you know, the very, very young level. So, I mean, he became at the age of 7. I don't know when he joined which academy or if Hercules was even his first stop. But yeah, so it could have been that Hercules never got him in front of Barca, Real Madrid, or even Valencia or Villarreal.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Valencia, Villarreal, Levante, like that would be the teams that he plays against as a kid, right?
I mean, maybe he also wanted to stay at Hercules because it was kind of where home was after coming from a different country at the age of 7. I mean, all those things. I mean, we don't know. It's the same.
Maybe, but yeah. I also think maybe it's because he's hunchbacked and scouts look at him and like, you know, no, this kid walks funny.
I don't know. I mean, you see him run. I mean, like you could have seen him walk and then not watch a kid run to scout him. That's a joke. That's not a real thing. I don't know. It's poor scouting if that was the idea. Okay, so we have to move on to the second part of our show here, where as good as Abde is at dribbling, it might be helpful in the spring to have a player, maybe not necessarily Luke de Jong, but I guess the question I'll ask you, tongue-in-cheek, did Luke de Jong's game and winner against Mallorca do enough to stop the club from bringing Alvaro Morata in on loan? And I want to hear your opinion about Alvaro Morata, because these are not rumors anymore. The idea that he would come in on loan and then be bought for a reduced fee for the Antoine, basically an Antoine Griezmann pseudo swap with Atletico Madrid paying a lesser amount for Antoine Griezmann, as he'll never go back to Juventus, that being Alvaro Morata. So you, I think, are pro Morata, correct? Coming in on loan from, again, I'm adding qualifiers here because I think I've changed my mind. If you get Alvaro Morata coming in on loan for a cheap amount, I mean, is he an 18 million euro player? I mean, probably. I mean, that's the fair figure. And if the number matches, I guess, what he's worth, it doesn't. I mean, I guess the deal makes sense.
18 million is what is being talked about now?
No, I just threw that number out there. That, again, if it's reduced from, if it's a loan move and Antoine Griezmann's is reduced from 40 down, right? How much could it possibly be? I guess it might, you know, is what I'm wondering. It's not going to be 35 for Morata if Griezmann is 40. That doesn't make sense.
Right. So here's the thing. We don't really know the club's financial situation. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, my opinion on Haaland is well known. I just don't think that that is smart in any way, shape, or form. Although I do think an Mbappe versus Haaland Liga decade is interesting in its own right. I just think it's stylistically Mbappe would fit better at Barcelona and Haaland would fit better at Madrid, but whatever. I'm assuming that we do not have money to do whatever we want. That's the first assumption. I think that with 1.35 billion of debt, it is a reasonable assumption. Second, I look at the number nines that we have right now. I think Ansu and Ferran Torres can play nine, and I like both Ansu and Ferran Torres better at nine than the idea of signing Alvaro Morata. However, I also see Braithwaite, Luke de Jong, Ferran Jukla, and let's throw in Memphis Depay when he plays at nine.
And no one in Barca B. I want to add that too. There's no pipeline number nine.
No, that's Ferran Jukla.
Right, which is not, he's a winger. Yeah. He's never played number nine. So I want to throw that out there too.
Fair enough. So I do think that Morata is a better option than four of the players who have already played at number nine during the last 12 months for our club. I think that Morata probably fits the way that we want to play. His movement and his, like, he's certainly a complete player. He's not bad at anything. He's not outstanding in anything either, but he's not bad at anything. He's reasonably quick. He makes runs into space. He then usually misses his chances, but he makes runs into space. He presses better than, say 60% of the forwards. He passes the ball reasonably well. Like, I think we could do a lot worse than having him on our squad, as long as the numbers make sense. And that is the big if. Like, I am assuming here that he is willing to come on a low salary, because I think for him, the idea of joining Barca at this moment in his career must be very, very enticing, very attractive. I think for Spanish players, the big Spanish clubs have still like a huge pull. So would he make our team better? Absolutely. Would we have been better off having Morata at the club during the last 3-4 months of the season? Absolutely. That would have probably like given us the couple of points that we need already in order to be in a Champions League spot. Do I think it's the most amazing signing ever that we have ever been rumored with? No, clearly not. But if the club makes this signing with a good financial conditions and Xavi wants him, then I'm all for it, man.
Yeah, it is interesting because it does feel like a little bit of realism in that transfer. That Barca, I mean, I had also poo-pooed the idea of Ferran Torres, not as a player. Again, I love the player, but I was wondering if Barca could actually afford him. And the answer is they can't afford him physically with the transfer fee, but they are still struggling to get him registered just because they need players out. And again, it's a long month of January. So let's, you know, we might not see him for a few weeks. He also is rehabbing from a broken foot. So Ferran Torres also at 21. This is a long-term signing. This is not a short-term signing. So I want to keep our minds on that. I want to go all the way back to the Haaland point, though. Whether he's important on the field or not, I mean, he's, again, one of the huge marketing giants of the sport. He's going to make a lot of revenue in that way, just individually. He's going to put butts in the seats no matter what happens. You know, I also want to mention that especially with these free, it's all one big idea, but the free transfers of Nusair Mazraoui from Ajax, the right back, Denis Zakaria, the Borussia Mönchengladbach center midfielder, Cesar Azpilicueta, and Andres Christensen on free transfers from Chelsea. Those four free transfers, as well as Jose Gaya a year early from Valencia, and then Erling Haaland. Those names are all being thrown around as, oh, the rehauling of Barca in the summer. But of those six players, especially the free transfers, everybody is going to want them. So I want to say that this is really easy to do. Google the name Zakaria, right? If you read the top 15 or 20 in both English and Spanish results on Google about where he's going to go in transfer rumors or whatever, you would never think that Zakaria is coming to Barcelona. That is not in any way an option, just because the number of rumors linking him to other clubs in the Bundesliga, including Dortmund and Bayern, and then especially in the Premier League. Of course, you know, Manchester United and Liverpool are thrown in everywhere, but those are the kind of clubs that it's seeming like, especially as a Swiss player, not very often do you see Swiss players jumping to the Liga. So, I mean, just
I'm sorry, what do we want Sakaria for?
What do you mean? As a, like, as it's just as a midfield defensive destroyer or pivot or something, but no, it's fine. It's fair. It's fair. Sure. I mean, that's not even the question I'm asking. I'm just saying that, I mean, for these free transfers, everybody wants those free transfers. So it's not like Barcelona are uncovering that Azpilicueta is a free transfer or Mesraoui is a right back. I mean, fullbacks are going at a premium, right? So how much is Barca willing to spend on each of those players on their wages? Because the wage, just like with Wijnaldum, the wage that they're being offered is going to be the thing that's going to take them from club to club. And then the point of Haaland, I mean, he's to the T that for Barcelona feels like Haaland's being linked between Raiola and Laporta every single day. But honestly, if you ask a Man City or Real Madrid fan, they're convinced beyond Barcelona, because Barcelona, even if Haaland would want to choose Barcelona and Barcelona wants him, Barcelona still can't afford him in a way that Man City is saying, how, we have the money now in January. Why aren't you getting Erling Haaland right now? That's because he's going to play it out with Dortmund. And Real Madrid saying, I mean, Tebas is the one who said that Barca can't afford him and that Real Madrid can afford both Mbappe and Haaland. And going back to your final point, I'm going to throw it back to you, is that I'm wondering, you said Spanish players, but I'm going to extend that. There's this question with Kylian Mbappe leaving from PSG to Madrid of what clubs players want to play for. And between Ferran Torres and Alvaro Morata, and that's a good point that those are Spanish players. But I do wonder, you know, what clubs players want to play for. And Laporta, I mean, the one thing that he might have been true in saying with the Ferran Torres presentation is that players may still want to now come to play for Xavi. That might be a true statement. And, you know, money be darned, players might come and play for Xavi.
Okay, so there's a couple of things here. Like, there are many people in the world who seem to believe that money is the most important factor to every footballer on earth, which is insane. Which is that opinion is just ridiculous, because there are so many examples of footballers who do not go to the club that pays them the most.
Of course.
Like many examples are at our club, but you can also find examples in the Bundesliga, where players stay at Bayern, even though they could have gone to England or Spain and earn more. Or there's even players who stay at Dortmund when they could have gone to Bayern. You know, there are so many examples of players who choose to go somewhere where they don't earn the most. So the fact that clubs can offer higher wages to certain players, yeah, it's not an advantage for Barcelona. Of course, it's not an advantage. But it does not necessarily mean that a player will choose to go to where he can earn more.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're not getting any of those free transfers. I'm saying that all the best free transfers are not all coming to Barca. That's what I'm saying. I mean, two of the four or three of the four might choose money over the Barcelona project.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think the other thing where I was going with, and that is what I like so much about Ferran Torres, like his total deal, or at least what is being thrown around in public, 5.5 before taxes. That's very low for a player of his profile, and it's a long-term deal. So that is a huge advantage in itself. If Morata also comes on a package such as that, great. What I don't think can work is, like, Haaland will obviously go where he can earn a lot, because he can choose any club and be important at any club, and his agent is Mino Raiola. And also, he does not really look like the most humble of men, you know? So it's going to be difficult to have Ferran Torres on the team making 2.5-3 million after taxes, and Haaland making 10. And he can probably get 20 at another club.
Yeah.
You know, so I think is difficult.
Yeah, I mean, that is the argument, too, that we're talking about, where when Laporta says that Barca can afford to rebuild now, he's talking about transfer fees. He's talking about the club has money between loans and, again, people being back in the seats and season ticket holders having bought, and just having money, cash on hand to be able to use on transfer fees. And also the ability to, again, to sign these players for multiple deals so that those transfer fees are even broken up over multiple years as well. Right. The reason why Barca are still in so many problems, if you will, it's just the short term, the wage bill is still you know, still high through this season though. And then once the summertime hits, it's an automatic reset. And I talked a few weeks ago with Patreon Mike about the fact that Laporta, he pushed all of the negativity on one financial year so that next year is going to look so much better. And it will. I mean, once it's true, like, we're not using Coutinho as a scapegoat. Coutinho's wages are the scapegoat, not even him, the player, but his number is still too high. Sergio Roberto, before he signs his contract renewal, whether he stays or goes, his number is still too high because it was built on the old wage structure. And it's not even about the individual players so much as it is they were signed to fit this wage structure. And now you have players that either you take that renewal or we have to wait for your contract to end down, or we need to find a way to get your salary elsewhere while you're on loan or somewhere else, because we need to readjust that wage structure for the incoming players as well. Where all these, and that is, you're right, the Ferran Torres 5.5 might have, we'll say this, doomed other players that want to play at Barcelona for refitting into the current salary structure. Same thing with Ansu Fati's renewal. And then you're looking around and, you mean, you've had an opinion on Ronald Araujo. I want to bring that up real quickly here. I mean, Araujo's going to be, there's going to be what he's worth and then how he fits into the Barcelona wage structure. And I think he's not going to make what he's worth, but he's going to have to choose if he wants to make, you know, I think top center back money in the Barcelona, in the new Barcelona wage structure now that they've recorrected.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think we have Gavi and Araujo are really important renewals. What we do with those players and our ability to renew them is more important than signing whoever.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like you can sign whoever you want. If you lose Gavi or you lose Araujo, that's worse than signing somebody who may or may not work out.
Yeah.
No, we have players right now with insane potential, and not just insane potential. They're already good. They're already really good and really important right now. So prioritize those first. I would add Dembélé to that, but it does not seem that Dembélé and his agent have been negotiating in good faith the last 4 or 5 months, which, if he wants to leave for more money, that's his right. What I think is really not good is that the way that he has gone about it so far. So we had Eric Garcia and Memphis Depay, who came to us on frees, but their clubs knew it one year in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And they even asked their clubs to try to negotiate a deal with Barcelona to come here earlier. And then the clubs tried and there wasn't any money. So
yeah,
that petered out. But at least, like, they did not treat their clubs like jerks to then go to wherever. So yeah, it's more important to renew who we have and then see who we can add, and add like good profiles to fit what we're already working on than to try to add a star player to this. It's also very possible that we're signing Morata now because we can afford him, because he makes our team better, and because it puts us in the position 2 seasons from now to go for whoever is amazing then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, I guess one of the final parts and one of the boring parts is that whoever is at the table now and making decisions in those renewals, I mean, I think Laporta has a bit of say in some of that and you know, those meetings with those players, but also, again, Jordi Cruyff, Mateo Alemany. And I want to say that Mateo Alemany, I mean, in recent weeks and months has I think given me a ton of faith that there was worry that, I mean, Laporta might bring in quote unquote his own guys, and you know, have all these people that are just saying a thing but not actually getting the business done. And, you know, as much as Laporta says the fancy thing or the fun thing that's going to make the headlines, Alemany's work, it seems like, on the ground in these meetings is really, I mean, putting together a sporting project. And, mm-hmm. you know, Messi had criticized that sporting project for a long time. And for him to not say right the ship, but with the help of what Roman Planas was starting to build, I mean, and then if Alemany can take that and continue on, it worries me a little bit that Roman Planas is leaving. I do worry a bit about his ability to scout. He did find enough gems, but also, you know, Barca, what was it, last year or 2 years ago when they laid off 40% of their scouting department or something. So, I mean, that's a worry too. But in recent weeks, it's even telling to me that I have seen the club, for a reason I'll get into in a second, they have been linked to some of the best Spanish talent. And I'm not just talking about bringing in Pedri, but Alberto Molero of Las Palmas, who's basically Pedri's replacement at Las Palmas. He's 18 as their star attacking midfielder or whatever. Arnau Martinez of Girona is a wingback, right back, who came from La Masia, plays at Girona, but is one of the more promising fullbacks in Spanish football. And then Alejandro Frances, Real Zaragoza, who is too good for that team already. He's like 19 as well. All those players in recent weeks have been linked to Barca, either by Barcelona to show them early interest or by their agents to try to raise their profiles. Obviously, it's one of those two things. But if Barca can continue to be able to sniff around some of the best Spanish talent that's up and coming and either sign them to Juvenil A or Barca B, or I mean, how many young players can you have in your first team? I don't know, but some of those players have high ceilings too. But I have already kind of been given, I want to trust Alemany and I want to continue to do that. So how many free transfers can he bring in? I'm not sure. And I think the big referendum on him, and actually you kind of changed this. I think people are starting to think the big referendum on him is what elite signings can he bring in? Like I don't know if you want to call Ferran Torres absolutely elite, but he's A-, right? He's like just underneath that elite level. But if he can bring in, you know, in the next year or two, four or five of those level of players to really reinforce your top 15 or whatever, then that's, I think, the job that he has. But as you said, I mean, if he's bringing in Morata and bringing in Torres and he's slowly just putting those pieces together and Gabi and Nico increase their, and happy birthday to Nico, by the way, today, 20 years old or 20 years young. But as those players improve as well, Pedri and Fati, Alemany's job gets easier and easier, I think. And I don't know if we need to like say, oh, you need five free transfers in the next 2 or 3 years, or you need to spend on, I think Holland's a little different just because he is that, you know, he is that whatever, that gem. But I mean, like, when we're talking about the fullback positions in particular, actually, and like another center back or whatever, mm-hmm. do you need a Matthijs de Ligt, right? Or can you just get another, just a good center back that just gets the job done? And now you've got four very confident center back.
No, they'd be insane to sign Matthijs de Ligt. I think Matthijs de Ligt is an amazing defender and he would really, really fit the club. But the transfer fee and the salary, when we have Araujo and Eric Garcia at the club, That's just insane. That's just insane. I think it's also interesting to know, like, so Ramon Planes is leaving. We don't know which signings he was responsible for.
Right. You just have to believe, you know, Twitter.com that he was Pedri and he was Araujo. But you, again, I just believe Twitter.com.
Exactly. Like, so I think Pedri is like generally accepted that he was responsible for that signing. Great. But it's not as if he made all these signings by himself, right? So we're just gonna have to see how this turns out. I'm very interested in knowing who signed Abde and knowing who signed Ferran Jutla, because again, the idea that we have two valuable contributors right now who were signed for the B team and who nobody imagined would even get minutes this season in the first team, that's just all kinds of wonderful. So we don't know who was responsible for those signings, but yeah, Matteo Alemany, what we're going to judge him on. Not every signing is going to work out, obviously. So we want him to find some signings that work out for decent prices. It would also be good if he can help convince players to leave. That's also a difficult one. It would also help if the bad signings that he does make do not hurt the club for 5 years, because that's what has been happening with Bartomeu. Bartomeu made decisions that hurt the club for 5 years. And then, you know, between the opinion that players who do not want to leave are the devil incarnated, or players who do not want to leave are honorable athletes whose contract must be respected. I think there's an in-between there. But the fact is that we have too many players who actively hurt our club by staying. So at least what we want Matteo Alemany to do is not to sign anybody who will actively hurt our club for years and years, and sign more players that make us better than players that make us worse. There's one more thing that I want to say. What always makes me laugh is when I read the news saying, oh, Laporta is in love with Haaland, or Laporta really wants to sign this player or that player. And people on Twitter also say, oh, Laporta wants him. Laporta has never made a decision on which player we should try and sign.
Yeah, he wants SK Barca. That's what he wants. He looks at that big stadium and he goes, that's what I want. I mean, those are the things I bet he's looking at and excited about.
Not even there, because SK Barca is not his project. But yeah, Laporta is doing the responsible thing and saying, well, you know, this is the project that was given to me.
Yeah.
And I am not going to block a stadium just because it was Bartomeu's project. So that's 8 years from now, somebody is going to block my new stadium plans.
Right.
You know, no, he's doing the responsible thing and giving continuity to something that, you know, the club cannot postpone. What Laporta wants is Barca back at the top. And on a sporting level, what Laporta does is he trusts the people that he chose to get us there. So Laporta is going to listen to Alemany. He's going to listen to Jordi Cruyff. He's going to listen to Xavi. And he's going to take their advice on who to sign, and then he's going to try and make it possible. And in the meantime, whenever you shove a microphone in Laporta's face, Laporta is going to be Laporta.
Yep. For better or worse, love it or hate it. So, all right, I think I have received the letter for termination for this podcast this time around. So, no, but we're not going anywhere. We're still in the feed. We're not moving to free transfer or whatever. Our heart is with Barcelona at whatever wage we get. But I think that'll wrap it up for another edition of the show. We're on Twitter and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod, Hilton D13 for me. And he is Barcelev on Twitter as well. He's the big follow there. So, hit his name down in the show notes. Our closed Facebook group, the Barcelona Podcast, answer those questions. I'd let you in. The Patreon is how we keep making these shows. Always appreciate with that help. You can also listen to these shows without the ads over there. So a little incentive to support the show. And we're on YouTube, which the match reviews at the Barcelona Podcast. But most importantly, thanks so much for listening to the show. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barca,
y'all.